This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
This is Misrepresent, Behind the Face, a Fierce Woman. Happy spring, fierce listeners. After a winter hiatus, the Bears are back from hibernation, and so is Misrepresent, Behind the Face, a Fierce Woman. I'm your host, Charlene Sayo, and for the very first episode of the spring season, I'm very excited to share my conversation with Cairo-based artist and art historian Bahia Shahab, who gained international recognition during the Arab Spring Revolution in 2011 when her protest street art and graffiti went viral. Not only did Bahia share how she got involved with the demonstrations in Cairo, but how she now sees herself and her art as a participant and mediums for social change. And also on this episode, I've got music by DJ Rupture, Tres Tristes Tangos, and Tritachion for your musical listening pleasure. Coming up, we've got Women Hurrying History featuring jazz legend Billie Holiday, whose birthday is tomorrow, April 7th. The Strange Fruit songstress would have turned 101 years old. But before Women Hurrying History, and to wrap up the speedy intro, we'll take a big band music break with Tritachion's track, Little Lily Swing. A moment in history, her story, Women Hurrying History. When Eleanor Fagan was a young child growing up in Philadelphia during the 1920s, she read romance stories, dreamed of being a singer, and watched silent movies starring Billy Dove. Born to poverty, 13-year-old Eleanor joined her mother in Harlem, New York, who was working numerous temporary, low-paying jobs to support herself and Eleanor. Shortly after her 14th birthday, and inspired by actress Billy Dove, Eleanor adapted the stage name Billie Holiday and began singing in famous Harlem nightclubs such as Mexico's, Covan's, and the Alhambra Bar and Grill. At 20 years old, Billie signed with Brunswick Records and released the track What a Little Moonlight Can Do, which catapulted her career and quickly became known as Lady Day.
Southern trees bear strange fruit. Blood on the leaves and blood at the root. Black bodies swinging in the southern breeze.
Throughout her career, Billie recorded numerous jazz classics such as God Bless the Child, Lady Sings the Blues, I Cried for You, Miss Brown to You, Don't Explain, The Man I Love. But it's Strange Fruit that Billie Holiday is most identified with. The controversial song, which addressed the lynching of African Americans in the American South, penetrated the consciousness of white America at the end of the 1930s. Hailed as one of the greatest jazz singers of all time, Billie Holiday defined the genre, and to this day, her appeal transcends all musical tastes. Billie Holiday was born on April 7, 1915, and died on July 17, 1959, at the age of 44. A moment in history, her story, Women Hurrying History. Welcome back, fierce listeners, to Misrepresent Behind the Face of Fierce Woman. You just heard the track Takasim by DJ Rupture. And now for my favorite part of the show, my interview with Bahia Shahab. Bahia Shahab is a Lebanese-Egyptian artist, designer, and art historian. She's the director of visual cultures at the American University in Cairo. Bahia's artwork has been exhibited in China, Denmark, France, Germany, Italy, Lebanon, the United Arab Emirates, and the United States. In 2015, Bahia and her street art was featured in the documentary Nefertiti's Daughters. She's a 2012 TED Fellow and a 2016 TED Senior Fellow. Bahia was selected as one of BBC's list of 100 women for two consecutive years in a row and is recognized as one of UNESCO's 70 most accomplished women speakers. In February of this year, Bahia was in Vancouver for the week-long TED Talk conference, and even though we were emailing each other quite frequently, we never had the chance to meet. In the end, it all worked out, and I spoke with Bahia over Skype, where she spoke about protest art, documentation, memory, the banality of her own art, and why beauty in art is a Western luxury. And lastly, due to poor internet connections, parts of the interview may be distorted. Hello, Bahia. Thank you so much for joining me here on Misrepresent. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. Thank you.
I would like to ask you first and foremost about your project, A Thousand Times No, The Visual History of Lam Alif. What inspired you to study the word no in Arabic and its grand history?
I was invited to participate in an exhibition in 2010, commemorating 100 years of Islamic art in Europe. And the curators wanted me to produce work that used the Arabic language and the Arabic script. And to me, displaying for an audience in Europe who really cannot relate to the beauty of the Arabic language or comprehend its subtleties, I thought that as a message, I think if I had one thing I wanted to say, it would be no. So in Arabic, to confirm the no, we say no and a thousand times no. And this is where the idea to collect a thousand different no's from different Islamic and Arab periods in the past 1,400 years started.
Wow, that's very, very powerful. So have you gotten and gathered all 1,000 no's yet?
Yes, it's the installation was on display in September of 2010 at the Haus der Kunst in Munich. And with the installation, I published a book, and the book documents every single letter, where it came from, who's the patron, where it was produced, what was the medium, and the date.
I understand then your project, it became a little bit more public because it was an installation in Germany, but it became a public knowledge around the world in 2011 when the revolution in Cairo broke out. Can you talk about how you got involved in that and how and why? How did your art get involved in the revolution in Cairo?
The revolution started like many Egyptians. I was simply watching on my TV. And like the rest of the people around the world, I was not actively participating in the revolution. I teach at a university. I'm a historian. I'm also an artist. But I never thought that I would go down to that. Demonstrate. I think 9 months into the revolution, we realized that nothing really changed, and that more people need to go down on the street. And this is when I felt that my installation or these thousand no's were like ammunition that I could use and add messages to them. So I started using them and spraying them on the street and with different messages: no to violence, no to killing, no to humiliation, no to... So the different no's that, even though I had been documenting the revolution for 9 months as a historian, there was a point in time where I felt that I really... There are moments in history when you have to choose between being a spectator or an active participant. And I think I think it's seeing all that, I mean, all these people getting killed on the street, was not something easy to just watch and just say, this has nothing to do with me, because it was, this could happen to any of us, to my children, it could happen to me, it could happen to any of my friends. So you come to a point where you really need to choose whether to sit and watch or to actively participate and be part of the change.
Okay, and how has your life changed? Has it impacted you significantly since your involvement?
I think you're never the same. You leave another person behind after the revolution. I'm a completely different person. My priorities are different. The way I look at life is completely different. In terms of my practice, I mean, I used to display inside the white cube, and I really feel liberated to be able to just spray on the street now.
Oh,
it's,
wow.
I think it's much more rewarding. Yeah, it's very rewarding to feel that you can actually share your work on the street with anybody passing by, that you're not limited to a cube or a curator or the gaze of the educated elite, which I respect and I admire, but I'm really interested in changing the minds of the masses, making their life better. And if any work I can do can help me push towards that, then this is where I find my happiness.
Now, one of the images that you've stenciled is a blue bra, and I know it's an Arabic script, but beneath it, it looks like a foot. Can you talk about the story behind this image? It's very, very striking.
Yeah, this is just one of the incidents. I mean, we've seen hundreds, if not thousands, of these violations being taken against civilians. Unfortunately, it's still the case. And that specific incident, a veiled woman was on the street and she was harassed. She was actually attacked by the military, and they stripped her abaya of her body, and it revealed her blue bra. And the soldier was stepping on her with his foot. So this symbol of the foot that I decided to spray actually reads, long live a peaceful revolution.
Wow.
So I just simplified the act and added a small message, not to stripping the people, and long live a peaceful revolution.
Wow, thank you for that. Because I saw the imagery and it really is, it's quite brutal to watch. And this is something that's happening all the time then.
We are not really demonstrating anymore under the new regime, but it is happening in the prisons. It is happening by the people who are being kidnapped, the intellectuals who are being silenced. So unfortunately, it's still happening.
Now, going back to the violence that inspired the blue bra, I wanted to ask, in terms of, you know, the revolution that happened, not just in Egypt, but around the Arab world during the Arab Spring, there was a really strong emergence of women street artists. In Egypt, it's, you know, yourself, Mira Shihade, Aya Tarek, and Hendi Kira, who's made international headlines. And for somebody who lives in Canada, I mean, I was also very captivated by the emergence of women like yourselves who were out there on the street and really engaged with street art on a very political level. So can I ask you, if you look back at that time, just a few years ago, despite the dangers that were happening at the time publicly, especially to women, why do you think women such as yourselves also took the risk to engage in this kind of art?
I think there was a strong emergence of humanity. It's not just women. I mean, as humans, we went down to the street, and not just because of our sex. Yes, we are women, and we did talk about women's issues in our work, but it's really any human being would have went down to the street. I really don't like to highlight the fact that we were women only, but there were many brilliant men also working, and there were many brilliant women also working. They were demonstrating, they were helping the wounded, they were women and men. But because we were equal, we acted as such. During that period, everybody, women and men, considered themselves responsible for the future of our country. So not just as women, but as human beings who are concerned about the future of the country and the future of the people living in it.
I want to read a quote from you in an interview that you did a few years ago. You said, "In our case, we're not even trying to instill beauty. We're not yet up to that level. We're only trying to communicate ideas to society about change because we believe in change." Now, there's that common notion and agreement that art sometimes is solely about aesthetic pursuits, that it should be disconnected from social movements or political agendas, but that it should only just be concerned about beauty and beautifying the world. But yet this one quote, this very powerful quote that you said, dispels that or contradicts that, and I think grounds it in this moment in history.
I think it's the privilege of developed nations. Beauty is the privilege of developed nations. And I think our nations are still seeking an identity. And when you're seeking an identity, you are still fighting for basic rights. And that will shape that identity. So to me, this is where we are humanly. We are still trying to find a voice. You need a voice before you can sing, right?
Yeah.
So we're still learning about democracy. We are still exploring the possibilities. So that does not negate the fact that there are artists who are creating brilliant work coming out of the Arab world. There are people who are able to produce beautiful things. They are quite rare, but they do exist. But to me, my work is not concerned with that now. I'm really concerned about securing rights and using art as a platform for activism. Many artists do not find that to be their concern, and I respect that. I even admire that. I just feel too guilty at this point in history to produce artwork that is simply beautiful to be admired when the people don't have access to clean water, they can't put their children to schools, we have high levels of illiteracy, we don't have access to good education, women don't get equal pay or equal rights by law. So really, I personally feel too guilty to stand by and not do anything about that. So if my work can help change that, then this is what I will be doing.
Okay, thank you for that very powerful answer, Bahia. I really appreciate that. And one last question. You once said that your work is concerned with memory and historical documentation. Obviously, you're a historian, and that's, you know, what you're concerned with. Yet, you know, you're very much engaged with street and public art, which is very temporary. It's very fleeting. It's very ephemeral. And when you engage in it, we know that it's not going to last forever, that it could be painted over quite quickly or destroyed, you know, just soon like hours after it's been painted. So as a historian, how do you reconcile this contradiction? Because it's very intense.
Every day I see things that are much, much more valuable than my work being destroyed around me all over the Arab world. Look at Syria. Look at what happened in Iraq. So every day we are surrounded by events that destroy and ruin and erase our memory. So my work is absolutely insignificant when you have 1,000-year monuments that are so amazing and that represent so much of our culture being destroyed so savagely. A painted street art is really something really stupid and banal. It's not something that that is worthy of even a flinch, you know, because really we are losing on daily basis. And then you have the internet. You have the internet. And we have photography, so that so the work is documented and the idea is shared. So it's really insignificant if it remains on the street or not. The fact that it has been documented and shared with the world online, that gives it a new kind of life. It's a new birth.
So what's coming up for you then in terms of what you're doing and your art? Are you still doing street art and public art right now? What's the future?
So I last year I decided that I don't want to stop doing street art, and since it's impossible for me to spray in Cairo now, I decided to start spraying in different parts of the world. So last year I sprayed in Freiburg and in New Orleans. I started spraying the No again because I think we're simply back where we started. So I'm spraying No all over the world. Where anywhere I can go, I'm spraying it. And I was luckily in Vancouver this year, and this was my first stop where I sprayed several of my No stencils there. But I also started a new project in Canada, and I'm really happy that it started there, also in Vancouver. I want to honor and celebrate the famous Palestinian poet Mahmoud Darwish. So I started with one of his quotes, one of his poems that roughly translates to the poem. The stanza reads, and it translates to stand at the corner of a dream and fight. Yeah, I will be spraying more ish and more nose around the world this year. So this is my plan for this year.
Oh, Bahia, that is amazing. Thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Pleasure. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
And that's it. We're at the end of the show. That little bit you just heard was Calderon Polka by Tres Tristes Tangos. Thank you so much for listening to my conversation with artist and historian Bahia Shahab. For more information about Bahia and her work, please check out her website at the American University in Cairo at schools.aucegypt.edu/FAC/BAHIASHEHEB. That's schools.aucegypt.edu/FAC/Bahia Shahab. You can listen to past episodes of Misrepresent at misrepresent.com, and make sure to follow me on Twitter at just call me Shar for updates on future shows and guests. Intro and outro music by Emily Simone. Additional music by Stealing Orchestra and Rafael Genosio. DJ Rupture, Tres Tristes Tangos, The Arthur Pryor's Band, Steve Combs, and Ben Sound Music. Fiercest thank you to my guest, Bahia Shahab. And of course, thank you, fierce listeners and supporters. Tune in next week for another fierce episode featuring another fierce woman. This is Misrepresent, Behind the Face of Fierce Woman.